Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, part two of a fine new talk by Chris Hedges, plus a new song by David Rovix. I hope you'll stay tuned. Chris Hedges' hard-hitting speech is titled "The Politics of Cultural Despair." He spoke remotely to UCAS College in Dublin in October 2020. Last week we heard part one. There, Hedges catalogued the misery and despair into which the ruling corporate elite have plunged the majority of Americans. They did this on purpose and over decades. They did it with the active support of the Democratic Party and of Mr. Biden in particular. So argued Mr. Hedges in last week's installment. If last week's segment was a stinging Jeremiad, this week's is a gloomy vision of dystopia. For decades, Hedges said, but especially during the Trump administration, the ruling elite have aided, abetted, mobilized, and funded the forces of Christian fascism. Christian fascism draws its members mainly from the white working class. The grievances of this class are real, but the justified anger of these people is being cleverly and cynically misdirected, away from their real oppressors and towards all of America's liberal and democratic institutions. The Christian fascists have become the foot soldiers in the elite's own war against democracy and liberal values. What will be the result? Hedges sees only three possibilities: reform, revolution, or fascism. And he thinks reform cannot happen, so corrupt is our system. That leaves either widespread popular rebellion, culminating in some form of humane democratic socialism, or else fascism. You can decide which outcome is more likely. Yes, today's portion of Hedges' speech is intellectually compelling and, as we used to say, a real bummer. So when the speech is done, we'll follow it with a rare bit of optimism from singer David Rovix. Hedges gave this talk in late October 2020, just before our national election. In fact, Hedges predicts well the election results. Biden will win the vote, and then Trump will do everything in his power to prevent Biden from being inaugurated. Pretty good soothsaying. Here is Chris Hedges and part two of his talk, "The Politics of Cultural Despair."
Trump is a symptom. He is not the disease. And if he leaves office, far more competent and dangerous demagogues will rise if the social conditions are not improved to take his place. I come out of the liberal Christian church. I graduated from Harvard Divinity School. And I believe the greatest moral failing of the liberal church has been its refusal, justified in the name of tolerance and dialogue, to denounce the followers of the Christian right as heretics. By tolerating the intolerant, it ceded religious legitimacy to an array of con artists, charlatans, and demagogues and their cultish supporters. It stood by as the core gospel message, concern for the poor and oppressed, was perverted into a magical world where God and Jesus showered believers with material wealth and power. The white race became God's chosen agent. Imperialism and war became divine instruments for purging the world of infidels and barbarians, evil itself. Capitalism, because God blessed the righteous with wealth and power and condemned the immoral to poverty and suffering, became shorn of its inherent cruelty and exploitation. The iconography and symbols of American nationalism became intertwined with the iconography and symbols of the Christian faith. The mega pastors, narcissists, who rule despotic, cult-like fiefdoms, make millions of dollars by using this heretical belief system to prey on the despair and desperation of their congregations, victims of neoliberalism and deindustrialization. These believers find in Trump and these mega pastors a reflection of themselves, a champion of unfettered greed, the cult of masculinity, the lust for violence, white supremacy, bigotry, American chauvinism, religious intolerance, anger, racism, and conspiracy theories, which are the core central beliefs of the Christian right. When I wrote American Fascists, the Christian Right and the War on America, I was deadly serious about the term fascists. Tens of millions of Americans live hermetically sealed inside the vast media and educational edifice controlled by this crisis cult. In this world, miracles are real. Satan, allied with secular humanists and Muslims, is seeking to destroy America, and Trump is God's anointed vessel to build the Christian nation and cement into place a government that instills, quote-unquote, biblical values. These biblical values include banning abortion, protecting the traditional family, turning the Ten Commandments into secular law, crushing infidels, especially Muslims, indoctrinating children in schools with biblical teachings, and thwarting sexual license, which includes any sexual relationship other than a marriage between a man and a woman. Trump is routinely compared by these evangelical leaders to the biblical King Cyrus, who rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem and restored the Jews to the city. Trump, in fact, has filled his own ideological void with Christian fascism. He has elevated members of the Christian right to prominent positions, including Mike Pence to the vice presidency, Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State, Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education, Ben Carson as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Bill Barr as Attorney General, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, and Amy Comey Barrett's about to join them, and the televangelist Paula White to his Faith and Opportunities Initiative. More importantly, Trump has handed the Christian right veto and appointment power over key positions in government, especially in federal courts. He has installed 133 district court judges out of 677 total, 50 appeals court judges out of 179, and two, and very soon three, U.S. Supreme Court justices out of nine. This is 19% of the federal trial judges currently in service. Nearly all are extremists who make up these judicial appointees and have been rated as unqualified by the American Bar Association, the country's largest nonpartisan coalition of lawyers. Trump has moved to ban Muslim immigrants and roll back civil rights legislation. He has made war on reproductive rights by restricting abortion and defunding Planned Parenthood. He has stripped away LGBTQ rights. He has ripped down the firewall between church and state by revoking the Johnson Amendment, which prohibits churches which are tax exempt from endorsing political candidates. His appointees throughout the government routinely use biblical strictures to justify an array of policy decisions, including environmental deregulation, war, tax cuts, and the replacement of public schools with charter schools, an action that permits the transfer of federal funds to private Christian schools. I studied ethics when I was at Harvard Divinity School with James Luther Adams, who had been in Germany in 1935 and 1936. Adams witnessed the rise of the so-called German Christian Church, which was pro-Nazi. He warned us about the disturbing parallels between the German Christian Church and the Christian right. Adolf Hitler, in the eyes of the German Christian Church, was a Volk Messiah, an instrument of God, a view similar to the one held today about Trump by many of his white evangelical supporters. Those demonized for Germany's economic collapse, especially Jews and communists, were agents of Satan. Fascism, Adams told us, always cloaked itself in a nation's most cherished symbols and rhetoric. And fascism would come to America not in the guise of stiff-armed, marching brown shirts and Nazi swastikas, but in mass recitations of the Pledge of Allegiance, the biblical sanctification of the state, and the sacralization of American militarism. Adams was the first person I heard label the extremists of the Christian right as fascists. And liberals, he warned, as in Nazi Germany, were blind to the tragic dimensions of history and radical evil. They would not react until it was too late. Trump's real legacy, I fear, will be the empowerment of these Christian fascists. They are what comes next. Noam Chomsky, for this reason, is right when he calls Mike Pence more dangerous than Trump. For decades, they have been organizing to take power. They have built infrastructures and organizations, including lobbying groups, schools, and universities, as well as media platforms to prepare. They have seeded their cadre into the judicial and legislative system, while we on the left have seen our institutions and organizations destroyed or corrupted by corporate power. Christian fascism is an emotional life raft for tens of millions of Americans. It is impervious to the education, dialogue, and discourse the liberal class naively believes can blunt or domesticate the movement. The Christian fascists by choice have severed themselves from rational thought. We will not placate or disarm this movement bent on our destruction by attempting to claim that we too have Christian values. This appeal only strengthens the legitimacy of the Christian fascists and weakens our own. We will transform American society into a socialist system that provides meaning, dignity, and hope for all its citizens, that cares and nurtures the most vulnerable among us, or we will become the victims of the Christian fascists we created. The Christian right is content to have the focus on societal or ethical as opposed to economic or social issues. The corporate media, whether they support or oppose the nomination of Amy Barrett to the Supreme Court, revolve around her opposition to abortion and membership in People of Praise, a far-right Catholic sect that practices speaking in tongues. What our corporate masters do not want examined is her subservience to corporate power, her hostility to workers, civil liberties, unions, and environmental regulations. The Democratic Party is beholden to the same donor class as the Republican Party. And since the media long ago substituted the culture wars for politics, the most ominous threat posed by Barrett and the Christian right is ignored. We currently have 5 Federalist Society Supreme Court justices. Barrett would be the 6th. And 2 of those justices, Clarence Thomas and Anton Scalia, were supported in the nomination process by Biden. All fascist and totalitarian movements paper over their squalid belief systems with the veneer of morality. They mouth pieties about restoring law and order, right and wrong, the sanctity of life, civic and family virtues, patriotism and tradition, to mask their dismantling of the open society and their silencing and persecution of all those who oppose them. This is the real game being played by the Christian fascists, which since the early 1970s has received tens of millions of dollars in corporate donations. The Christian right will mobilize in this election to use any tool, no matter how devious, from right-wing armed militias to the invalidation of ballots to thuggish poll watchers in democratically leaning neighborhoods to block Biden and the Democratic candidates from assuming office. The road to despotism is always paved with righteousness. Capitalism, driven by the twin obsessions of maximizing profit and reducing the cost of production by slashing workers' rights and wages, is antithetical to the Christian gospel, as well as the Enlightenment ethic defined by Immanuel Kant. But capitalism in the hands of the Christian fascists has become sacralized in the form of the prosperity gospel, the belief that Jesus came to minister to our material needs, blessing believers with wealth and power. The prosperity gospel delights the corporations that have carried out the slow-motion corporate coup d'etat. And this is why large companies such as Tyson Foods, which places Christian right chaplains and its plants, Purdue, Walmart, Sam's Warehouse, along with many others, pour money into the movement and institutions such as Liberty University and Patrick Henry Law School. This is why corporations have given millions of dollars to the Judicial Crisis Network and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to campaign for Barrett's appointment to the court. Barrett has ruled to cheat gig workers out of overtime, greenlight fossil fuel extraction and pollution, gut Obamacare, and strip consumers of protection from corporate fraud. The watchdog group Accountable U.S. found that as a circuit court judge, Barrett faced at least 55 cases in which citizens took on corporate entities in her court, and 76% of the time she ruled in favor of corporations. These corporations don't care about abortion, gun rights, or the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman. But like the German industrialists who backed the Nazi Party, they know that the Christian right will give an ideological veneer to ruthless corporate tyranny. These corporations view the Christian fascists the same way the German industrialists viewed the Nazis, as buffoons. They are aware that the Christian fascists will trash what is left of our anemic democracy and the ecosystem. But they also know that they will make huge profits in the process, and the rights of workers and citizens will be ruthlessly suppressed. If you are poor, if you lack proper medical care, if you are paid substandard wages, if you are trapped in the lower class, if you are a victim of violence, if you are in prison, this is because according to this ideology, you are not a good Christian and not blessed by God. In this belief system, you deserve what you get. There is nothing wrong, these homegrown fascists preach, with the structures or systems of power. The legal calculus for the Christian right no longer revolves around the concept of universal human rights, but around the tenets of quote-unquote Bible-believing Christians who supposedly authored the Constitution. Huge segments of the population are stripped of moral worth and legal protection. This process is incremental, and it is often unseen. As the Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels understood, the best propaganda is that which, as it were, works invisibly, penetrates the whole of life without the public having any knowledge of the propagandistic initiative. These Christian fascists are adept at preying on the despair of tens of millions of Americans. They know how to exploit the moral and physical decay, as well as the despair it causes, to seduce their followers into calling for their own enslavement. Trump has greenlighted the Islamophobia of the Christian right, banning Muslim immigrants, rolling back civil rights regulation. He has made war on reproductive rights, as I mentioned. The tinder that could ignite violent conflagrations throughout the United States lies ominously stacked around us. Millions of disenfranchised white Americans who see no way out of their economic and social misery, struggling with an emotional void, are seething with rage against a corrupt ruling class and bankrupt liberal elite that presides over political stagnation and grotesque mounting social inequality. Millions more alienated young men and women, also locked out of the economy, with no realistic prospect for advancement or integration, gripped by the same emotional void, have harnessed their fury in the name of tearing down governing structures and anti-fascism. These enraged, increasingly polarized segments of the population are rapidly consolidating as the political center disintegrates. They stand poised to tear apart the United States, awash in military-grade weapons, unable to cope with a COVID-19 pandemic and its economic fallout, cursed with militarized police forces that function as internal armies of occupation and de facto allies of the neo-fascists. We have three options left. Reform, which given the decay in the American body politic is impossible. Revolution or tyranny. The more things deteriorate, the more the elites feel threatened, the more brutal the police, the National Guard, the organs of state security will become. The longer we defy our masters, the more the populations in the jails and prisons, which are already largest in the world, will swell. Militarized police empowered to use lethal force on unarmed citizens and carry out wholesale surveillance of the public, along with prisons, have become, as in all totalitarian states, our primary form of social control. If this mafia state is not overthrown, America will soon become a naked police state, where any opposition, however tepid, will be met with draconian censorship or force. Police in cities across the country have already thwarted the reporting by dozens of journalists covering the protests through physical force, arrest, tear gas, rubber bullets, and pepper spray. The huge social divides, often built around race, will be used by the neo-fascists to divert a legitimate rage by a betrayed white working class to set neighbor against neighbor. Neo-fascist patriots will attack people of color, Muslims, feminists, intellectuals, artists, the media, and liberals. Dissent, even nonviolent dissent, will become treason. Violence employed by police and security agencies such as Homeland Security and the FBI, which have already devolved into occupying forces, will protect the exclusive interests of a tiny ruling criminal class. The uprising in the streets of American cities are not only about the wanton murder by police of yet another person of color, but a frantic fight to wrest back power over our own lives. They go far beyond police brutality, a daily reality for those trapped in our internal colonies. The uprisings are fueled as well by the seizure of the institutional and structural mechanisms that once made some form of equality, always imperfect, always colored by an animus towards the poor and people of color, possible. Most of America gets the message the oligarchs are sending. They and their children are expendable. They don't count. It is only the dwindling and largely white middle and professional class that still believes in the fiction that this election offers a choice or that we live in a democracy. It is ultimately the ruling elites who will determine the nature of resistance. When they close every escape route, when they speak exclusively in the language of force, then the language of force will become the only form of communication. The longer the ruling elites refuse to address the root causes behind these protests, behind the enemy that is gripping the United States, the more they loot the treasury to enrich themselves and their fellow oligarchs. The more they engage in futile and absurd efforts to deflect blame, the more unrest will spread. The poor, the vulnerable, those who are not white or not Christian, those who are undocumented or who do not mindlessly repeat the cant of a perverted Christian nationalism, will be offered up to feed the crisis cult, a familiar form of human sacrifice that plagues decayed societies. Once these enemies are purged from the nation we are promised, America will recover its lost glory, except that once one enemy is obliterated, another takes its place. Crisis cults require a steady escalation of conflict, a steady stream of victims. This is what made the war in the former Yugoslavia inevitable. Once one stage of conflict reaches a crescendo, it loses its efficacy. It must be replaced by ever more brutal and deadly confrontations. This intoxication, an addiction to greater and greater levels of violence, to purge the society of evil, led to genocide in Germany and the former Yugoslavia. We are not immune. It is what Ernst Jünger called a feast of death. Thank you.
Chris Hedges, ending his talk, The Politics of Cultural Despair. Let us lift the gloom just a little. Here is David Rovics on one of the few hopeful notes of Annus Horribilis 2020.
I woke up yesterday morning, heard the news report. The announcement of a study with no partisan retort. 90% effective is the phrase that's on repeat. Whoever has a majority of congressional seats, it might be too late to stop the coming round of who knows how many more bodies in the ground. But suddenly the future looks a lot less bleak than it did last spring or just last week as it's sinking in just what this could mean. Vaccine. Most of our problems, a vaccine will not stop. It won't end evictions or abolish killer cops. But when we have protest, we can sing into a mic without worrying about a viral spike. Get back to the life we had before. You know, growing inequality and an impending civil war. Such a precipice we're on in so many places. But soon maybe we'll meet it without masks upon our faces. And we can hug and kiss and groom and preen. Vaccine. Cheek to cheek, nose to nose. In every indoor space that hasn't had to close, all of us left alive will appreciate, no doubt, the simplest things that a good life is all about. Some folks will not like it. They'll make videos. They'll reach every corner where the paranoia grows. No telling how much time it'll take to save our skin. But it seems that maybe we're in a position to begin together out there. In the world, blue-green vaccine. I woke up yesterday morning, heard the news report.
And so we must end this installment of New World Notes. Find us on the web at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Peace.